important outlet for these great thinkers.
Hey folks, my name is Jordan Valerie. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and I'm here to tell you about the Millennial Politics Podcast. We speak with the next generation of progressive candidates, activists, and organizations dedicated to restoring our democracy and protecting our civil rights and liberties. Make sure to stay tuned for Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on the Progressive Radio Network, to hear the most recent episode of our podcast, and follow us on social media and iTunes to stay up to date with everything Millennial Politics.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to learn from Southern Medical University and Penn State University, published in the Annals of Rheumatoid Diseases, the glucosamine, that would be in glucosamine sulfate, that a lot of arthritis sufferers use, is associated with a lower death risk of 8.9 years. Wow. So that's big. This is a big study, 495,000 participants enrolled over a four-year period. So I go back to 1974, a debate that I had on WMCA radio, where I was debating one of the country's leading rheumatologists who said there is no association between any supplement or food or beverage causing arthritis or relieving it. And that was in their official journal. And that was what they all believed, all the rheumatologists. They were wrong then. And hopefully now they'll start to include this. So remember, you could lower your risk of death from cardiovascular disease, cancer, respiratory illnesses, digestive diseases, or any cause during a follow-up if you're using glucosamine, G-L-U-C-O-S-A-M-I-N-E. The A-M-I-N-E means amino acids, so glucosamine. So we have a lot to learn. All good. Saving lives, extending lifespan. We have about 10 more studies on health to share today. And then I'm going to share a comment from one of our listeners who called in, and he made some very salient points. I don't believe he was listening to yesterday's program when a nurse came on, a nurse practitioner, talking about, at least in the hospitals or hospital, that her friend who is a nurse and helping with coronavirus was saying that the way they're approaching it, people are dying, that there's indifference. Well, hello, before the coronavirus, over 200,000 Americans were dying in hospital every year just from drug reactions. That shouldn't have happened at all if they'd have been properly tested. But they didn't. And so under normal circumstances, there is abuse and neglect. There is wrong surgeries on wrong parts of the body, wrong medications and wrong amounts. There's a lot of problems. Now, this person was really angry because they saw indifference. For example, someone was going into cardiac arrest and they wouldn't resuscitate them because they were afraid of, you know, getting blood into their own body through the eyes, the nose, the mouth. So just let them die. So we have a follow-up to that today. Then today, we're also going to take a look at the FBI raiding a medical building that was offering free treatments for corona using vitamin C. That they raid, and yet we will prove that the science is that you can prevent the coronavirus. Now, I'm only going to cite peer-reviewed literature as of today. They're wrong, but then again, they're wrong about everything. And also, do COVID-19 ventilators and the protocols being used, are they actually killing people? Killing people who otherwise would live. So one of the leading people on this is being interviewed. Also, we have two physicians talking about why the protocols we're currently using are not working and shouldn't be accepted. So we have a lot to share on that. I do have an in-depth investigative report on Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci and why we should trust nothing that either one of these two people say. I don't know if I'll have time, but I will talk about something today. It's about U.S. military documents show that in 1992, and I want to thank Charles Ortlieb, a real hero in my opinion, for the gay community, but the gay community unfortunately was unaware that there were a tiny little segment aligned themselves with Burroughs Wellcome, Anthony Fauci, and Robert Gallo, and said that only one cause of AIDS, and that's HIV, nothing else, doesn't matter about your lifestyle, doesn't matter about anything except the HIV virus. They were wrong. And even the winner of the Nobel Prize for discovering HIV, Luc Montagnier, has independently confirmed that. There are multiple factors that contribute to this. In any case, Charles and his outstanding group of journalists, including Nina Ostrom, who should have won a Pulitzer Prize, told the truth. And for telling the truth, they were hammered until they were pariah within the medical industrial complex and segments of the gay community. And yet they were there to help save gays' lives and other people's lives. And so the voice of truth was extinguished after about 16 years. So we want to thank Charles because he deserves the credit for distributing this information and keeping the battle alive. Now, here's what we have to share with you today. Every time President Trump does a press conference on COVID virus, the CDC's current director, Robert Redfield, and then his assistant, Deborah Birx, both Army medical officers, knowingly, quote, falsified scientific data published in the New England Journal of Medicine and the journal AIDS Research and Human Retroviruses, fraudulently claiming that an HIV vaccine they helped develop was effective. They knew the vaccine was worthless. Redfield now runs the agency charged with mandating COVID vaccines. Birx, a lifelong protege of both Redfield and Anthony Fauci, served on the board of Bill Gates' Global Fund. Redfield, Birx, and Fauci led the White House's coronavirus task force. In 1992, two military investigators charged Redfield and Birx with engaging in, quote, a systematic pattern of data manipulation, inappropriate statistical analysis, and misleading data presentation in an apparent attempt to promote the usefulness of the GP160 AIDS vaccine, end quote. A subsequent Air Force tribunal on scientific fraud and misconduct agreed that Radfield's, quote, misleading or possibly deceptive, end quote, information, quote, seriously threatens his credibility as a researcher and has the potential to negatively impact AIDS research funding for military institutions as a whole. His allegedly unethical behavior creates false hope and could result in premature development of the vaccine, end quote. The tribunal recommended investigation by a, quote, fully independent outside investigative body, end quote. Dr. Redfield confessed to Department of Defense interrogators and to the tribunal that his analysis were faulty and deceptive. He agreed to publicly correct them. Afterwards, he continued making his false claims at three subsequent international HIV conferences and perjured himself in testimony before Congress, swearing that his vaccine cured HIV. Their gambit worked. Based upon his testimony, Congress appropriated $20 million to the military to support Redfield Birx's research project. Public Citizen complained in a 1994 letter to the Congressional Committee's Henry Waxman that the money caused the army to kill the investigation and, quote, whitewash, end quote, Redfield's crimes. The fraud propelled Burks and Redfield into stellar careers as health officials. And then I have all the documentation, and we are putting the documentation up on PRN.fm. It is there now. So what do we know and why is this important? The very people leading the entire COVID operations should be challenged for their statements, their perjuries, and their frauds that they engaged in earlier in their career. Now we know the truth. Let's act upon it. They should be fired and summarily dismissed from all positions of authority, and therefore independent scientists, scientists not affiliated with pro-vaccine organizations or the medical industrial complex, should be brought in to guide in a reasonable and responsible way our response to the COVID virus, because everything we've been told about the COVID virus up to this point has now been shown to be partially or fully inaccurate. Example, we were told that it is a pandemic, that it can infect and kill anyone. Not true. The average age of the first 3 months of victims was 80.1 years. They had 2 to 3 morbid, what is called comorbidity factors, meaning heart disease, end-stage emphysema, COPD, at the end of their life. Now, they were not tested by any currently accepted test with autopsies and toxic pattern behavior to see, do they actually have the virus, and was the virus in the body, or was the virus responsible for the disease? That has never been done. But the virus was given 100% credit for people who were in nursing homes at the end of their life, people who were in assisted living centers at the end of their life. Now, that is fraudulent science at its worst. And every scientist and every physician are smart enough to know that the autopsy must be based upon, and the death certificate, what you actually died from, and not what was simply in your body. But even this case, because there was as much as a 70% false positive or negative, we don't even know how many of these studies that people get to show they don't have the virus are wrong, or that they do have the virus are wrong. Secondly, they then said herd immunity, get enough people sick, and that's a good thing. It is not a good thing. Tomorrow, Richard Gale and I will present the most definitive article ever written, all fully scientifically backed, showing the herd immunity is a fraud. It has no basis in science. And we will deconstruct the myth of herd, and we are doing that now. However, for all the people who now have the coronavirus and are asymptomatic, we're saying take out their plasma and give it to people because that's a great therapy. That means that if the coronavirus worked for of coronavirus didn't kill you, now you're immune to it. Not true. That's another one of the pillars of their establishment approach that are wrong, dead wrong. And that is that we have not yet proven by any scientific standard published in any respected journal that the COVID virus, when you're sick from it, actually is protective thereafter and you won't get it again. Because why? People who have gotten the coronavirus once are getting it again. So the antibodies have not been proven by any gold standard to be protective, and therefore we shouldn't be giving people's plasma to people who don't have the virus in order to protect them, because we could be infecting them. This is just science gone run amok. And then keeping healthy people in homes that themselves could be suffering from all forms of condition, including depression of their immune systems, lack of exercise, depression, anxiety, and then thing being hit with bills like in Ohio. Who in the world could repay that loan? How about nobody who took it? So you're creating debt peonage. Then you allow the payday lenders to take their assets, including if they should be lucky enough to get $1,400 or $1,200, whatever comes to them, they will get it first. This is supporting a form of debt slavery. My God, I didn't know how much further down the rabbit hole that you have to go, but move to, well, you move to Louisiana, move to West Virginia, move to Ohio, move to a lot of places, and you see how bad it actually is. And that's only because the politicians, not the people. The people are fine, decent, ethical human being. The politicians, they're always the problem. So now we've got research, and we want to thank RFK Jr. for discovering this research, and we want to thank Charles Ortley for promoting it. So now you have it. So demand these people be fired. demand a congressional investigation, demand a Department of Justice investigation into both the CDC director, Robert Redfield, and another top person, Deborah Birx, B-I-R-X. All right? So let's see if the mainstream media carries any of this information, all documented, and no one's going to carry it. Now we go back to the latest on health. I just wanted to get that away out front. And also, by the way, don't assume that anyone knows that I'm supporting the official view on the coronavirus originating in China. I am not. I want you to go up to prn.fm, and there you will download three articles. These three articles I wrote in 1987 and 1986. They were not just regular articles. These were major investigative reporting articles. They were part of a series of 58 articles I did over 25 years called Medical Genocide. And one of those articles, for example, were human guinea pigs. Let me just read the first line of this. It says, and this is Article 15 in this particular series. It says, you are an inmate in a state penitentiary. One of the staff doctors approaches you and asks you to help make, quote, an important contribution to medical knowledge, end quote. The experiment in which he'd like you to participate involves radiating your testicles and performing a vasectomy. All you are assured for the good of science and the future of the human race. Later, you learn that your vasectomy, which rendered you sterile for life, was not part of the experiment. It served no benefit to medical science. It was done solely to prevent you from ever fathering children in order to, quote, avoid any possibility of contaminating the general population with radiation-induced mutants, end quote, or mutations, what would be mutations to your genes. Does this sound like a bizarre plot or grade B horror movie? If only it were. Until recently, few of us would have believed that our own government would pay respected scientists at leading academic institutions to conduct harmful medical experiments on human subjects, or that the military uses American soldiers as human guinea pigs. Few would have believed government officials would pry on subjects who have few resources to refuse such testing. Poor people, prisoners, service people, the terminally ill. It would have been even more difficult to imagine the government deliberately exposing the public to open-air contaminated air designed for chemical and biological warfare. This is the first in a series of articles on human experimentation. It will focus upon testing by the government and the military establishment. The second article will explore the use of experimentation by the medical establishment via such things as chemotherapy, radiation, unproven surgical techniques, and programs of mass vaccination. The series will document how we are routinely exposed to human experimentation by this nation's scientific and medical communities, the government, and the military. In my opinion, the results of these experiments and the minds that conceive them, and then I go on from there, and it's, and then I get into how they went into hospitals, including Sloan Kettering, and injected live cancer cells into people, especially pregnant women, just to see would cancer develop in women who did not have cancer. Wow. And nothing was done to the people who led this. And I named them, I named their institutions, and then I gave year by year all the different experiments in all the hospitals, Massachusetts General Hospital, University of Rochester, feeding children toast with radiation on it. Yeah. University of Oregon. Yeah. So, University of Chicago in the Argonne National Laboratory in Argonne, Illinois. This was the first that any American journalist that I'm aware of had ever exposed all these secret experiments. It took me 2 years of investigation, traveling all over America. But they were injecting uranium nitrate enriched in U-234 and 235 without the subjects knowing what they were being given. And there was no follow-up. None. So how many of these people would later die of being given these exposures. So in any case, I did this back in September 1987, and I did a series, and I saw how absolutely nefarious, how manipulative, how sociopathic the entire medical, industrial, military, industrial complex are. So do you think that I have not considered what if scientists in America created the coronavirus or in some way were responsible for saying that it got into China? And is that possible? Well, right now it is a theory that is gaining support from some scientific articles. But I'll lay it out only after all the facts are in. Until that time, I'm keeping a completely open mind. But remember, I've exposed this before. And let's see what I'll expose in the future. A few more things on health and healing. I want to go back to that glucosamine supplement. And that's because a lot of Americans are suffering. And when I say a lot, probably 30 million. Because the official numbers are never estimating correctly. There's always overages that don't report. So if you could take a simple nutrient, an inexpensive nutrient, like glucosamine, and extend your life and not die from heart disease and cancer and everything else for 9 years, that would be a value. This was published in the British Medical Journal, their journal Annals of Rheumatic Disease. Also, University of Bordeaux, which is in France, published in the peer-reviewed journal Neurology, which foods do you eat together? How you combine them may raise your dementia risk. So according to University of Bordeaux, there is a connection between your diet and your brain. And here's what they found based upon the latest study. And this is in the current journal of neurology published by the American Academy of Neurology. That if you eat a diet, mostly of highly processed meats, that's the average American, starchy foods, like potato, French fried potatoes, breads, pastas, and snacks like cookies and cakes, you're far more likely to have dementia later in life than if you ate a healthier diet. Well, I'm glad they did this study because it just confirms what other studies by the hundreds have shown, that if you have a diet high in green leafy vegetables, berries, nuts, and whole grains, and other nutrient-rich foods, you lower your risk of dementia. So that's good. And also from Lanzhou University in China, published in the Journal of Medicinal Food, quercetin, there we come again, quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, demonstrates analgesic effect in post-inflammatory irritable bowel syndrome. Just turning off pain by turning off inflammation and turning down the pro-inflammatory cytokines in the intestine. Well, if it works for irritable bowel, it'll work for ileitis, colitis, spastic colon, a GERD. Yeah, quercetin's a great healer. Also, from Harvard School of Public Health comes a new study published in the Journal of American Medical Association's Journal of Medicine that plants are good against diabetes. Hence, adapting a plant-based diet can slash your risk of developing metabolic diseases. Yeah, they looked at 300,000 participants, and this was done at Harvard's Chan School of Public Health. So they looked at 9 other studies, too, all show the same thing. A healthy plant-based diet, you reduce your chance of diabetes. Okay, we've gone one step further. I did a study, one of the 44 clinical studies, and everyone in the study had diabetes, and we were able to help about 90% of those people completely overcome their diabetes, no more diabetes, normal blood sugar, off all meds, by a healthy plant-based diet. And finally, from the University of Seville, which is in Spain, and this was done at the Department of Pharmacology, Pediatrics, and Radiology at the University of Seville, and they also worked in collaboration with the University of California, or excuse me, University of Catalonia, they found that orujo, olive oil, reduces obesity. That's O-R-U-J-O. Now, that is what they generally use in Spain. It's a much heavier olive oil, darker, but it has enormous healing potential. Helps shed all levels. And tomorrow I'll talk about the University of Chicago just did a study on the best mask to put and make to help get up to an N95. So I'll give you the materials on that. That's the latest on health and healing. We are 24 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go to a caller who called in and made some statements. Now, since I'm not able to take calls at this moment because we're so packed with information, this is a person who is citing his own experience. And maybe it represents just him. Maybe it represents more than him and other people. But I believe that we should be a forum that encourages different perspectives on different points of view. Back in a moment with this one caller telling us that, and then we're going to go directly from him into a discussion for about 10 minutes of a Dr. Erickson talking about what is wrong with, what's wrong with the existing protocols we're using.
I'd like to leave a message about you because I see you obviously were in close contact with Gary Noel, and something which he should bring attention to on his show, which I listen to very often, the fact that they're not allowing people in hospitals, family members, to be close to be with them. Obviously, I understand because of infection, but there's obviously, there's a huge amount of neglect, negligence, and abuse which is going on in the hospital. I live in a very close-knit community here in Brooklyn, and there's so many cases of people, literally who died because they weren't given food. They weren't even given water in hospitals. I'm talking about New York hospitals here. They don't allow even one family in, and that itself is like just an opening for abuse and neglect to go on. People lying, literally dying in before they get to the emergency. I mean, in emergency rooms, people being the attitude of the nurses, the attitude of the doctors, what's going on in the hospital is absolutely disgraceful, and you can't legally do anything about it because the governor made some special kind of law statute that I believe it's like a wartime thing that you, so basically they can do what they want and they can just allow you to die if they, I mean, they're obviously going to say that they have short-staffed, but things are going on, huge amount of abuse, and I know stories from friends. I live in the Orthodox Jewish community here, and there's huge amount of cases here. Literally, so many people dying because of neglect, and we'd be much better off to be at home, and people taking things in their own hands, using alternative methods, hiring nurses, getting oxygen for them at home, and people actually dying like animals in these hospitals. It's absolutely disgusting what's going on, and I don't know if people are talking about that, and I haven't heard Gary mention it. And I'm sure it's going on. I mean, it's absolutely disgraceful. There's nothing. I heard that people are trying to work on the legislation now to get things changed to allow at least one family member into the hospital. I mean, if the person got the right gear and they've got masks and gloves and is told what to do, I mean, there's so many volunteers who are willing to help, and they're not being allowed. And they're literally covering up. They don't want people to see what's going on in the hospitals. It's literally, the hospitals are like, it's disgraceful. It's just absolute disgraceful what's going on. My name is Philip, and my number is 347.
Sorry, Philip, we can't give your phone number out. But we appreciate you calling in and sharing your points of view. I have been saying all along that the protocols they're using are not adequate or proper for the condition. And only now are other people suggesting that. And in fact, we're going to play in a few minutes a discussion with the head medical doctor of PubMed with the emergency room physician who has a background in pulmonology saying that something is terribly wrong with all these patients being put on ventilators. You know, we're seeing things we've never seen before. That's exactly when they should have stopped all this and taken an honest look at what they were dealing with instead of creating a protocol and then everyone follows the protocol after it has been shown not only not to save lives, but actually to hurt more people, kill more people. And that right now, the figures are anywhere. I've seen figures of 86 and figures of 88% of all the people put on these ventilators die. That's a terrible statistic. That's way, way higher than what would normally be if you put someone on a ventilator. So why aren't you trying hyperbaric oxygen therapy? Why aren't you trying intravenous vitamin C? Because both of those have been tried elsewhere and are having some success. Anyhow, that's I wanted to give him a chance to say what's on his mind. We're not afraid of having people present positions that someone could agree or someone disagree with. We need to have open forums. Now let's go to hearing two doctors who've come forward and have laid it on the line about what we're doing wrong and why we have to have a different mindset. Now, it doesn't mean that I agree with everything they're saying, but it does mean that I'm willing to have people inside the medical community. These are not alternative doctors. These are mainstream physicians. When they're saying what we're doing within mainstream medicine is wrong. We'll hear from them now.
I'm learning every day. So is Dr. Erickson. We all learn every day. It's not about being right, who's wrong. It's not a basketball game, who made the basket, who didn't. It's about looking at trends and saying, hey, we're not seeing what they've been talking about for the past 6 to 8 weeks. We've crippled the economy. There's a lot of domestic issues going on. Is social isolation warranted for the healthy?
So I understand that you guys are seeing different, drawing different conclusions from the same data. Why is that? That's my question.
Because we're actually seeing the patients. Dr. Fauci hasn't seen a patient for 20 years. I'm just saying, it's in general, a lot of the figureheads are not, it's like the general contractor versus the sub. He's not seeing patients, he's in an ivory tower. And we have a world of respect for him. He's a world-renowned immunologist. Two different things. He's an academic. We've dealt with academics all of our life. I did surgery at USC and Loma Linda, all academics. But academics in reality is two different things. So we're just presenting our data and our opinion as medical professionals in this community.
So you're not necessarily talking about a community in Manhattan, which obviously is much.
Well, I haven't been to Manhattan for 20 years, right? Yeah.
So let me ask this. So I mean, in your professional expertise, both of you guys very prominent here in the community. Why do you think we are taking these measures? Why do you think that? Let's Governor Gavin Newsom. Why do you think he's taking these measures to have California being on a strict shutdown right now?
Well, again, as a leader, you listen to the people around you, and they make decisions on different timelines. And so Gavin Newsom has people around him telling him, we think this is the best move for now. And then early on, we told people the truth changes every 2 hours, because it was. As the data moves, as we do our own testing, I'm giving a different answer now than I would have a month ago, because I understand the progression of disease in this area. I also understand the progression of disease elsewhere because I look at their data. I don't have to live in Manhattan to watch their disease process, to watch how many positives in the community, and to understand how diseases spread. For instance, nobody talks about the fact that coronavirus lives on plastics for 3 days, and we're all sheltering in place. Where'd you get your water bottles from? Costco. Where'd you get that plastic shovel from? Home Depot. Those are fomites and carriers of disease. So you take your family sheltering in a place that you think is safe, and you're taking fomites with disease that they've shown that lasts 3 days. Are you really protecting yourself from COVID? Does that make sense to you? It doesn't make sense to me. And if I swabbed things in your home, I would likely find COVID-19. And so you think you're protected, but you've got fomites coming from, you know, Home Depot and Lowe's. And it's okay for us to be mingling in those situations, but we have to not go to work. It's okay for us to go to Costco, but not to church. Do you see the lack of consistency here? From a microbiological, immunological standpoint, that doesn't make sense. If you're going to isolate people, you need to shut these all down, because that's how the fomites are being transferred. When you go to Del Taco and you get a plastic bag or piece on your burrito from someone not wearing a mask who was just wiping their arm on your thing, do you think you're protected from COVID? When you wear gloves that transfer disease everywhere, those gloves have bacteria all over them. I'm wearing gloves, not helping you. As your mask that you're wearing for days, you touch the outside of it, COVID, and then touch your mouth. This doesn't make any sense. We wear masks in an acute setting to protect us. We're not wearing masks. Why is that? Because we understand microbiology, we understand immunology, and we want strong immune systems. I don't want to hide in my home, develop a weak immune system, and then come out and get diseased. We have both been in the ER through swine flu and through bird flu. Did we shut down for those? Were they much less dangerous than COVID? Is the flu less dangerous than COVID? Let's look at the death rates. No, it's not. They're similar in prevalence and in death rate. So we are saying that our response now that we know the facts, it's time to get back to work. It's time to test people. But again, testing gives you a moment in time. Testing tells you, the nasal swab says positive or negative. The blood vial, the tiger top or the finger stick, gives you IgG, IgM. IgG being the long-term immunoglobulin we look at for immunity. But again, it's a moment in time. And what's interesting to me too is when someone dies in this country right now, they're not talking about the high blood pressure, the diabetes, the stroke. They say, did they die from COVID? We've been to hundreds of autopsies. You don't talk about one thing. You talk about comorbidities. Their vessels were narrowed. Their lungs were a smoker. COVID was part of it. It is not the reason they died, folks. It is one of many reasons. So to be so simplistic to say that's a COVID death because they have COVID, you know how many people die with pneumonia or people that die from flu? With flu, I should say. It's not from flu. Their lungs were compromised by COPD. They had a heart attack 2 years ago. They have a weakened body. We aren't pressured to test for flu. But ER doctors now, my friends that I talk to, say, you know, it's interesting. When I'm writing up my death report, I'm being pressured to add COVID. Why is that? Why are we being pressured to add COVID to maybe increase the numbers and make it look a little bit worse than it is? I think so. So this is what I'm hearing from physicians I talked to in Wisconsin, New York, and everywhere.
So you think that physicians are being pressured to make the numbers look worse than they are?
They're being pressured to add it to their diagnostic list.
And so where is that pressure coming from, in your opinion?
Well, I'm probably coming from the administration. So their administration is saying.
Or the Newsom administration?
It's probably coming from the hospital administration. I didn't ask them specifically, but they said we're being pressured in-house to add COVID to the diagnostic list when we think it has nothing to do with the actual cause of death.
You can't confirm that beyond their words.
The actual cause of death was not COVID, but it's being reported as one of the disease processes and being added to the death list when they died from COPD. They had COVID. COVID didn't kill them. 25 years of tobacco use killed them.
Yeah, that's actually interesting. So I guess my question right off of that is, I know right now what we're discussing isn't really anything new. There's people who have immune deficiencies who COVID just supplements whatever illness they're dealing with, and that's contributing to their, you know, to their death. So going back to what I think the theme is here is quarantining and social distancing, is it necessary? So my question is it necessary for, are you saying it's only necessary for some individuals to be quarantining, but for healthy individuals, it's not?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's, why would you quarantine the healthy?
If you're young and healthy, why would you quarantine yourself? It doesn't make any sense. You quarantine the ill.
And well, don't they say that one of the reasons to do that is because, you know, so many people are asymptomatic, and then they may take it home and spread it
sure.
to someone who is immunocompromised.
Sure.
I mean, isn't that part of the reason?
25% of patients who have COVID are asymptomatic, which is why we advocate for widespread testing. In order to open the economy, you have to have widespread testing. That's number one, no question about it. But historically, if you look at biblical times, you look at leprosy, Mycobacterium leprae, which is the bacteria that causes it. They isolated the sick. They didn't isolate everybody else. So isolating the healthy just doesn't make sense, in our opinion.
So you guys think herd immunity is kind of the way to go then?
Absolutely.
I think so.
There's two ways to get rid of a virus, right? Either it burns itself out or herd immunity. For hundreds of years, we relied on herd immunity. Viruses kill people. End of story. The flu kills people. COVID kills people. But for the rest of us, we develop herd immunity. We develop the ability to take this virus in and defeat it. And for the vast majority, 95% of those around the globe, this is true. And when we look at people that have locked down and people that haven't locked down, we have massive data. It is not statistically significant whether you lock down or not. So why are we doing it?
Do you think it's safe for the state to lift the lockdown?
Yes.
Would it be safe for people to be
yes.
outside right now?
Yes. I'm outside with no mask.
Are the gloves and mask maybe a little bit too much right now? Is that kind of what you're saying in some sense?
Well, again, do you want your immune system built or do you want it not built? The building blocks of your immune system is virus and bacteria, end of story. That's how you build it.
And there's normal bacteria and normal flora. There's normal bacteria and normal flora that we have to be exposed to. Bacteria and viruses that are not virulent are our friends. They protect us against bad bacteria and bad viruses. So right now, if you look at Dr. Erickson's skin or my skin, we have strep, we have staph. All staph isn't bad, all strep isn't bad. They protect us against opportunistic infections. That's why when a baby comes out of the womb for the first 3 to 6 months, they're extremely vulnerable to opportunistic infections, which is why when we see a little baby in the ER with fever that's 1 month old, you do a spinal tap, you do a chest x-ray, you do blood cultures, you do urine cultures. But if you had a fever, I wouldn't do that for you. Why? Because that baby does not have the normal bacteria and flora from the community, whereas you do, because you've interacted with, you know, you've gone to the gas station, you've gone to Home Depot. That's the difference. Normal flora, we all need normal flora. What Dr. Erickson is saying is when you are self-isolating at home for 2 or 3 months, you lose that normal flora. So I guarantee when we reopen, there's going to be a huge, huge amount of illness that's going to be rampant. Because our immune systems have weakened. And that's just basic immunology and virology.
I just wanted to ask Dr. Erickson if you were done with your presentation or if you had more things to talk about.
Let's see
my questions for the end.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure.
I had some conclusions, but basically our conclusions are that when I look at the basic tenets that we know of microbiology, and I say, do we need to still shelter in place? Our answer is emphatically no. Do we need businesses?
Okay, that's the full interview, an hour and 3 minutes, and press conferences on our website. It's very rare for physicians to come forward and have a press conference. They put their reputations on the line, their income on the line. And one after another has been attacked by the medical industrial complex. A whole group of scientists or physicians go forward who are on the payroll or obliged to represent the deeds and views and ideology of the mainstream medicine and try to attack and discredit them. All the more reason we should pay attention to these people because they have everything to risk and nothing to gain by going public, just like whistleblowers. Where are the Edward Snowdens? Where are the Chelsea Mannings? Where are the people who have the courage to come forward now? All right? And they are coming forward, by the way. I'm very pleased that. By the way, I'm going to have Dr. Brownstein on the program because he looked at a 2020 study of Seoul, out of Seoul, South Korea, looked at the effectiveness of surgical and cotton masks in blocking COVID-19 in a controlled comparison of 4 patients. The COVID-infected patients were put in negative pressure isolation rooms, and the scientists compared disposable surgical masks, meaning three layers, with reusable cotton masks. Patients were instructed to cough five times while wearing no mask, surgical mask, or cotton mask. Interesting, all swabs from the outer masks, including surgical masks, were positive for COVID-19. Inner masks were also found to be contaminated. That means the mask did not effectively filter out the COVID virus since it's too small. The authors state, quote, neither surgical nor cotton masks effectively filter during coughs by infected persons. I just believe in that case we should have a better mask for people who are known to be carriers. There are certainly those in hospitals and certainly those who are at home. You have to have a mask, but it's also showing us one of the fallacies of wearing masks in general, or certainly out in the public, where it's not actually protective unless a person is sick and coughing, not just from COVID, but the viruses are smaller than the protection of the masks in most cases. Anyhow, more on that when I have him on the air. Now, let's change the course here a bit, and let's hear from a person who has some interesting observations about the COVID virus.
Following the same rules right now, they're very clear. So let's take a minute, let's go over them again. First, you must not leave the house for any reason, unless of course you have a reason, and then you may leave the house. All stores are closed except those that are open. And all stores must close unless, of course, they need to stay open. This virus is deadly, but don't be afraid of it. It can only kill people who are vulnerable and also those who are not vulnerable. We should stay locked down until the virus stops infecting people. And it will only stop infecting people if enough of us get infected that we build immunity. So it is very important that we get infected and also do not get infected. You should not go to the doctor's office or the hospital unless you have to go there. Unless, of course, you are too sick to go there. This virus has no effect on children except for those children in which it affects. The virus remains active on different surfaces for 2 hours or 4 hours or 6 hours, but in most cases it's days and not hours, and it needs a damp environment or a cold environment that is warm and dry in the air, unless the air is plastic. Schools are closed, so you need to homeschool your children unless you can send them to school because you are not home. If you are at home, you can school your children using various portals and online classrooms unless you have poor internet, more than one child, only one computer, or you are working from home. Baking cakes can be considered math, science, or art. If you are home educating, you can include household chores within their education curriculum. And if you are home educating, you may start drinking at approximately 10 a.m. every day. If you are not home educating children, you may also start drinking at approximately 10 a.m. Masks are useless at protecting you against the virus, but you still need to wear one because it can save lives. And in some cases, it may even be mandatory, but also maybe not. You must not go to work, but you can get another job, at which point you may go to work. Stay home. I don't know how many more celebrities we need to have tell you how important it is to go outside and take care of your mental health. There is no shortage of groceries in the supermarket. There are simply many things missing. You don't need to go buy a bunch of toilet paper, but you should buy some in case you need it. If you are sick, you may go out once you are better, but those in your household, they cannot go out once you are better unless, of course, they need to go out. Animals are not affected by the virus, except for that cat that tested positive in Belgium in February, plus a couple tigers. The number of corona-related deaths will be announced daily, but we don't know how many people are infected because we were only testing those who are almost dead to determine if that's what they will die of. The people who die of corona who are not counted won't or will be counted, but maybe not. To help protect yourself during these times, you should be eating well and exercising, but exercising only eating what you have at home to avoid going to the stores unless you need toilet paper or a fence panel. It's important to get fresh air, but don't go to parks, but do go walk in other places. Just don't sit down unless you are old or pregnant. But if you do sit down, don't sit for too long, unless you are old and you are pregnant, in which case you need to sit down. But if you do sit down, don't eat unless you've had a long walk, which you are allowed to do if you are old or pregnant, except for times in which you aren't. Don't visit old people, but you have a moral obligation to take care of old people and bring them food and medicine. And finally, no businesses will go down due to coronavirus except those businesses that go down due to COVID-19. I hope this cleared up any questions about what we should and should not be doing during this time. Please educate your friends and family with this information.
Okay. That shows you just how much confusion there is in the world of coronavirus. Now, I'm going to go through, I'll hold off some of the other, I'm going to do my commentary tomorrow on Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci. It'll be enlightening. I can promise you what I'm going to share with you, you didn't know. And they're not going to be happy with the fact that you're going to find out. Just like today, letting you know that the people directing the war on the coronavirus are known for having engaged in lies, and therefore they shouldn't be employed at all. Then I realize we only employ liars. So that's a, well, that gets into that whole mind game. By the way, the best way of listening to this program is generally on the archives. That's where most people live. About 97% of people listen to the show on the archives. Let me just give you the number, so you always have it. Write it down, please. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. That way you can listen with one phone call up to five different shows. Also, we have a voicemail number. If you'd like to call in and leave a comment about anything you think is relevant, just like the gentleman did today, and I addressed that issue, call this number and you can leave a voicemail. 862-800-6805. 862-800-6805. You can raise a question or you can leave a comment. Now let me go through a few things in the last 5 minutes of our program. First up, we have to look at this article out of Medical Express. This is based upon the Department of Homeland Security Secretary William Bryan, Science Technology Advisor. Yesterday, they said that they found that ultraviolet rays had a potent impact on the pathogen, offering hope that its spread may ease over the summer. I would agree with that, but also it's long been known that ultraviolet light has a sterilizing effect because the radiation damages the virus's genetic material and their ability to replicate. In fact, for 33 years, where I was a senior research fellow at the Institute of Applied Biology and the director of their anti-aging medical department, every single room had ultraviolet light. And we're talking about major areas of viral research and bacterial research. They were mainly doing genetic research, cancer research, and pain research. These were orthodox scientists. And Big Pharma supported a lot of that, or most of it. So they, when I would talk with them, they said that my department didn't need it because to have it installed because I wasn't dealing with viruses or bacteria that were pathogenic. And that's true. And I just kept it all sterilized in any case, my own way, without that. But you couldn't go anywhere in that institute without seeing the blue lights. And then they would come in with these wands, and at night the workers would, and they would take them over every enclosure, every square inch of that entire institute got that. So why aren't we putting those in every hospital room in America? As you walk in the door, you have to walk through an ultraviolet light. When you're in operating theaters, you have ultraviolet killing as much bacteria and viruses as possible. Put it over where surgeons and nurses wash their hands. So there's a lot we could do with that, but the sunlight does kill. Here's what it says, quote, sunlight destroys coronavirus quickly. The new coronavirus is quickly destroyed by sunlight. All right, so that's one more good piece of information. Then we have, let's just see here. 1 in 7 Americans would avoid care for suspected COVID-19 fearing cost of treatment. This is from West Health Institute. Quote, challenges in getting care, whether for COVID-19 or other conditions, could force millions of Americans to make difficult choices about their well-being. And that's correct. See, if we had universal health care, we wouldn't have these issues because nobody go broke or nobody could say they couldn't afford either the testing or, which I agree, we should all be tested to see what our status is, but then understand that the fact that they have an antibody doesn't mean you're protected. That science has not been proven yet. But think of all the people who are not getting the surgeries they need. Think of the people who have heart disease advanced, who have high blood pressure, who have cancers, and not going in for their treatments because they're afraid of catching the COVID virus, which they feel would then, based upon the statistics, tip them already compromising their immune system into the abyss of a fatal disease. That's why we should be setting up immediately, going into construction or taking over some major buildings and federal buildings and state buildings and repurposing them as critical care facilities, meaning the only people treated there are people who have a pre-existing serious and life-threatening medical condition, and then bring in protocols that are known to be effective in helping them. That would make a difference, and therefore people wouldn't be thinking, I can't afford to go to the hospital. So that's very important. Does living in New York make any financial sense after this pandemic? I'm going to address this tomorrow. It's an article by Lynn Strong from The Guardian. And for many of us living in New York City, we've long passed the time when we realize it's not the right place at this time, nor will ever be again, to have a small business, to live, to visit. Yes, great city, great people. But it has become prohibitively expensive, and now we see the chaos and the corruption of the body politic and the inefficiency and the lack of any preparedness to deal with any crisis, let alone this one. We'll be back tomorrow, everyone, with more insights and truth. Tonight, an hour with a leading virologist, just her and me, on what's wrong with what we're doing, and she believes she knows where the coronavirus was actually created. Interesting. We'll see that. 7 o'clock, PRN.FM. Have a nice day.